can't mention how much it's going to cost, because we're going to put this out on another network, with about 16 stations, but it's a non-profit network, so there won't be any problem. I just warn you about that, but the rest of it, I'll just go ahead and why this is important. All right. What are your thoughts on John Roberts? Absolutely right. He expected administrations, reward William Pryor, Justice William Pryor, for destroying Judge Roy Moore by giving him an interim appointment to the Supreme Court. Why should we expect that they would appoint a honest-to-goodness constitutionalist, Christian or conservative, to the Supreme Court? In the pro-life business, are sending out articles that are saying, hey, we've got to get into the Supreme Court. Sweet life. Hey, hang on, we've got to put down for it. Here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, illusion, or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we need to be much pressed here, or certainly not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. Now, our special guest this evening is Michael Perutka, and Michael has worked with the Constitution Party for a long time. He's a lawyer based back in Annapolis, Maryland, but he is certainly on the front lines of the battle, trying to get people to understand the truth about what's going on today. And that truth is, we're involved in a spiritual battle here in America. It's being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, but it's really a spiritual battle for the souls of survival of Western civilization, and many things are happening that people just do not understand. And I think we can back it up from adequate information and documentation. Most of the media is controlled in the United States. There's a wonderful book. It's called The New Media Monopoly. It's written by a left-wing professor at the University of California in Berkeley, formerly the head of the Department of Journalism in Berkeley, named Ben Bekdakian. It's called The New Media Monopoly, but it points out that five mega corporations dominate the American media and largely control what the American people read, what the American people hear, what the American people see, and ultimately what the American people believe. So with that as the background, Michael Perutka, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Dr. Stan, it is a privilege, as always, to be back with you. It's been a long time since we talked, but what a privilege to be with you, and I thank you for your hospitality.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you've been doing. First, at one time, why Michael was the Constitution Party candidate for the presidency of the United States, and he toured the United States, but of course he was totally ignored by the media. It was amazing how the major media kept talking about Ralph Nader, and Ralph Nader had almost no support. He wasn't on the ballot in very many states. And Michael, you were on the ballot, what, in over 40 states?
Well, we actually ended up getting on the ballot in 36 states. If I could say it shorthand, we were cheated out of a couple, but we got on the ballot in 36 states. And if anybody knows anything about the ballot access process, it's invented by Democrats and Republicans, and of course, it's designed to keep out competition. So we were privileged to be on 36 ballots, and I got about a third of the votes that Mr. Nader did. Of course, he got a whole lot more coverage than I did. But Dr. Stan, one thing that's very encouraging is that Constitution Party candidates across America got almost 1 million votes. 1 million different people in America voted at some level of government for a Constitution Party candidate. Now, that's not the 59 million we need, but it sure is a great start. They say the hardest million to get is the first million. So, we've got that. I'm encouraged that the American people are starting to wake up to the myth that we have a two-party system. We obviously both parties, with media covering them. Really are two sides of the same coin or two wings of the same bird, and we don't really have a choice between them, but the Constitution Party is trying to be that real alternative.
And I think it's really exciting as we see people beginning to grasp the fact that both of our major political parties support the war, both of them support globalism, both of them support ever bigger government and more control over every aspect of our lives. And as George Wallace said just before they shot him, there's really not a dime's worth of difference between them. And so they shot him. And we'll be back in just a moment here with Michael Perutka. Well, Michael, let's go ahead and pick up the story there. And I think, you know, it's so easy to get discouraged and say, gee, we didn't win. But the important thing was that you put up a wonderful fight. And certainly with the fact that you were totally blocked out by the majority of the media, and whenever your name was mentioned on one of my programs, people would say, who is Michael Perutka? And the fact that most people have never heard of you or your candidacy simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think.
Well,
so
sure,
pick up
it does.
The story there.
Sure, it does, Dr. Stan. And as I was saying, I'm encouraged, despite the fact of the blackout. And I was smiling when you said we're totally blacked out, when you said totally, because I think they did take time a little bit here and there to mock us. So it wasn't totally blacked out. But it was, as I was saying earlier, ballot access and major media coverage are the two big hurdles for anybody like us to try to break through and get our message out to the American people. And as you know, and as your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, it is a very filtered process. People would say to me, hey, well, when are you going to get your name out there? When are we going to hear about you? Well, in America today, if you just sit in your living room and wait for the news, you won't get the news. You'll get the news they want you to get. You've actually got to get very proactive, and that's why the Internet is very important and other sources are very important. You've got to go out to find out what's happening because, as you have pointed out, Dr. Stan, the major media is very filtered. And what does not come through is anybody promoting what I'm called the American view of law and government. Dr. Stan, I got involved in all this before I was a candidate for president. I happened to be the founder, and I was privileged to be the founder of something, co-founder of something called the Institute on the Constitution. And people can learn about the Institute on the Constitution by going to iotconline.com. IOTC standing for Institute on the Constitution, iotconline.com. And what the whole purpose of Institute on the Constitution is we provide materials, and actually materials you can use in your home or in your church to learn and to teach others to study the principles upon which America was founded, and the proper forms and the limits of America's government. I probably would call this remedial civics. It's what we all should have learned or will to know to be effective, good American citizens. And so Institute on the Constitution was an effort to reconnect America with the history and the heritage of freedom under law. And
hold that thought for just a moment, please, because
sure.
We're going to have to bring our other stations online. They're coming back right this moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Michael Perutka, who during the last election was the Constitution Party candidate, and the reason you didn't hear about him is because you weren't supposed to, because the media wants to give you two political parties, a Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B, and you have the candidates of their choice, and whichever candidate wins, their man is always victorious.
Sure.
And certainly Michael was making the point that he has been working long before he ever became the candidate for the Constitution Party. He was working with an organization or co-founder of an organization known as the Institute of the Constitution. And it provides the educational material to train people about our form of government, material that they should have learned in their civics classes in school, and you just don't learn it today. And the one thing you don't learn is that our founding fathers didn't trust the structure of government, for as Thomas Jefferson had said so well, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. And they recognized that limited federal government and liberty were synonymous, and that total federal government and tyranny were synonymous, and they wanted to limit the power of government and let the people be free. So pick the story up there, Michael.
Well, sure, Dr. Stan, and recognizing those principles of America's founding, and recognizing that they weren't being taught in schools and really weren't being promoted in the media in any way, and that we needed remedial civics in America. My brother and I was privileged to help to get started this group called Institute on the Constitution. I was mentioning that people can find out a whole lot about it, more than we have time to cover here, but by going to IOTConline.com. That's Institute on the Constitution, so it's IOTConline.com. And what we're really trying to do there is to reconnect Americans with the history and the heritage of liberty under law, which is our birthright, and to help to debunk many of the myths and the lies that have been kind of forced down our throat here in America, like the separation of church and state, the perversion of that, this whole idea that the character of a public official doesn't count. You know, character doesn't count. What he does in his public life and what he does in his private life are they're separate things. And of course, that's a myth. The most important thing our founding fathers said you should check is that, and they should be concerned about, is a man's character, because most of what he's going to do is behind closed doors once you elect him or appoint him. Myths like courts make law. Courts don't make law. We hear that this nominee Judge John Roberts saying that Roe v. Wade, for example, is settled law. Well, how could it be when courts don't make law? So we deal with things like that. We try to debunk the myths, try to teach people how to be good jurors. That is to say, people are told when they go to jury duty, Dr. Stan, that they can't judge the facts, they can't judge the law of the case. They can just judge the facts, make a determination about the facts. But in fact, the American jury system and common law was built on the idea that the jury is there to stop overzealous prosecution and to be a check, another limit, another branch of government, if you will, to limit unfair prosecution. So all of these things are things that we learn and study at Institute on the Constitution. And since the campaign has been over, I want to encourage people to go to a new website that we've been working on, which is called The American View, and it's theamericanview.com. I have the privilege of hosting a radio program that's on in, I think, about 35 cities in about 22 states. And if you go to theamericanview.com, you can find out if it's on in your area, and you can tune in. And what we do is that we take those principles that we learned at Institute on the Constitution, or those principles of America's founding, and then we apply them to the issues of the day. Our first program, we talked about the murder of Terry Schiavo, for example. We've done interviews with Supreme Court justices. We've talked about the myth of the two-party system that you were alluding to earlier. We did a program on that. We've talked about Judge Roberts' nomination the past few weeks. This nominee for the Supreme Court, who actually twice in that short address, if you saw him when President Bush introduced him, twice in that address, Dr. Stan, he referred to America as a democracy.
And if he doesn't know the difference between a republic and a democracy, how could he possibly be a Supreme Court justice? You could read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence and the Federalist Papers and never see any mention of the word democracy other than to say, we really don't want a democracy in America. Of course, you know, at the 10th of the Federalist Papers, it was James Madison who said, democracies are air spectacles of turbulence and contention, are incompatible with the rights of private property and personal liberty, and are as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. They did not want a democracy here. Why would anybody who's being considered for the Supreme Court refer to America as a democracy when our founding fathers abhorred the idea, knowing full well what had happened in ancient Greece and Rome and every other place that had been tried? And so that's why they established here a republic. And we pledge our allegiance when we pledge to the flag to the republic for which it stands, certainly not the democracy.
Well, of course, that's true. And I think, Dr. Stan, don't you have to wonder when you hear a man who's just been introduced by the president and nominated to the Supreme Court of the United States, and he doesn't have the form of government right? Shouldn't this be a giant red flag? Shouldn't this put your antenna up that this man and those who appointed him and support him do not have the discernment necessary to carry out their jobs, and they don't belong in the office. So, but you know, American people, Dr. Stan, won't know that unless they know their civics and unless they know the principles on which America was founded. And again, that's why we talk about them in the American view, and that's why we teach them in the Institute on the Constitution. So I encourage people, and by the way, those websites, if you go to one, you can find the other that way. But I encourage people to go to theamericanview.com, and we have articles written by Mr. John Lofton and myself and others, Scott Whiteman, who was our campaign manager during the campaign, and others who contribute to that, and my brother Stephen, who is a very strong pro-life activist and leader, who are trying to present the issues of the day in light of the American view. And I've said that the phrase a number of times. You know, Dr. Stan, there is an American view of law and government. It's set forth pretty plainly in our, well, actually pretty eloquently in our Declaration of Independence, where Jefferson said all men are evolved equal, right?
Now, of course, in many of our schools, they won't even allow them to teach the Declaration of Independence because
right.
It talks about God. It talks about our Creator, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to pursue these rights, governments are constituted among men, deriving their power from the agreement of the people. In other words, the power comes from the people to establish a government to ensure our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But
sure.
These are God-given rights, and of course, those people who would destroy this country realize that if they can destroy the concept of God, they can destroy the concept of freedom. And
sure.
There really are people who would have a dictatorship in America, and that is why recently the Supreme Court held that a set of documents, including the Declaration of Independence, could not be posted in a public building in the state of Kentucky. Why? Because it mentioned God. And there really is a conspiracy against God. It's mentioned so many times in the Bible. If you get out your concordance and look up the word conspiracy, it's a perfectly good word. God used it, and if it's good enough for God, I don't know why we shouldn't use it, and why we should run for cover, and we should point out that this is a spiritual battle.
Sure.
There are people who hate God, and when you understand that, you can understand why they're doing what they're doing today.
Of course, and you know, the recognition and the acknowledgement of God is the very first foundational principle of American law and government, because if you take God out of the equation, there is no security for your rights. Then rights come from whoever's got the most guns or the most badges or the most power. And this, is, of course, is antithetical to the American view. So we have to be aware of what I call, Dr. Stan, the false fight here. As you mentioned earlier, this is really a false fight between the Democrats and the Republicans. They're really on the same side principally in every issue, in every issue. And so it's really a false fight between Mr. Bush or Mr. Kerry. Heads I win, tails you lose. You don't really have a true constitutional or American alternative in that. And
but, you know, Michael, one of the things that they have done is to try to give the American people the idea that the Republicans are pro-life and the Democrats are pro-choice. And we keep hammering away at that, and many of my very, very good friends, you know, are staunch Republicans because they believe the Republican Party is pro-life. And yet, with a Republican president and a Republican Senate and a Republican House of Representatives, they could have negated Roe versus Wade, or they could have, when they passed the partial birth abortion bill, simply put a piece of legislation on there that said the Supreme Court cannot intervene under the authority of Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. But they didn't do that, knowing full well they could support the partial birth abortion bill and it would be negated by the courts.
Sure.
And yet Congress can stop that from happening. They could pass legislation outlawing abortion, at least as far as the federal government was concerned, and saying the courts will have nothing to say with that. They pander to the conservatives, they pander to the Christians. They create the impression that they're pro-life. But look at the end result of what's really happened. And since 19, well, what is it, how long we had the Republicans complete total control? And have we saved any lives, Michael?
No, not one baby has been saved by Mr. Bush or any Republican Congress or court.
But, of course, they put up a good show, and they hornswoggled the American people. We'll be back in just a moment here with Michael Perutia talking about the real issues that you're not going to see discussed elsewhere. Well, I guess it's Michael Perutia. Michael, pick up the story there.
Well, thank you. One of the things we were saying, Dr. Stan, is that we're being, I think you used the word hornswoggled. We are being led to believe that there is a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. We're led to believe, and many of our good friends and conservative people that we have some admiration for, are rushing to support this nomination of Justice Judge John Roberts for the Supreme Court, when there is absolutely no indication from his lips or from President Bush that he's pro-life at all. And many of our pro-life friends are, I believe, hornswoggled. What's that word?
Hornswoggled. It's an old word. I remember my dad used to use that, you know, 75 years ago.
Well, he was right. We're being fooled into thinking that Roberts, and out of his own mouth in his 2003 confirmation hearings, he said Roe v. Wade is settled law. First of all, it's not law at all. If you took Institute on the Constitution, you'd know that, and if you listen to Dr. Stan's show, you'd know that. Of course, because courts don't make law, so it is not law. But he says it's settled law, and there's nothing in his personal view. He said there's nothing in my personal view which would lead me that would keep me from fully effectuating and pursuing that law. So what he's basically saying is he's not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. He says it's settled law. This is. That's his position, and we are we're many of our pro-life leaders and people that I have some admiration for otherwise are jumping in to say we have to get him nominated. This is my brother Stephen Perutia actually wrote a very good article on this that's on our website, The American View. And basically, he said, look, this is Lucy, Charlie Brown, and the football again. we're going to rush to try to get this guy nominated, and he's not pro-life, and we're going to be disappointed again.
Well, I think we have to look and see who put the people in the Supreme Court today. And what nobody wants to point out is that 7 of the 9 Supreme Court justices, many of whom we staunchly disagree with, were appointed by Republican administration. So does it mean you have a Republican administration that got to put in a good Supreme Court justice? And over again they say, oh, shucks, we just made a mistake. Oh, shucks, the people have changed. These people didn't change at all. They were always exactly the same. They just don't want the American people to know that people who control the leadership of both political parties are dedicated to exactly the same goals. And these are very liberal goals. These are pro-choice or pro-death goals. They are energized, I believe, by dark spiritual forces. But they play games with us. We always think that we're going to get a Republican in and then we're going to get a good Supreme Court justice in. But why should we expect that the current administration, which rewarded William Pryor, who was the man who destroyed the career of Judge Roy Moore, the Ten Commandments judge, that went out to get him and to attack him and humiliate him, why would we expect that the administration that rewarded William Pryor for the fine work he'd done by giving him an interim appointment to the federal bench, why would we expect that to give us an honest-to-goodness pro-life Supreme Court justice? We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Now, you pick up on that, Michael. I was just pointing out to our listeners that William Pryor was the Attorney General of the state of Alabama, who had promised the governor there, Fob James, that he would support Judge Roy Moore in his stand on the Supreme Court. And then somebody made an offer to William Pryor, and he did a flip-flop. He violated his attorney-client privilege, because he had been represented to Judge Roy Moore before that, and he set out to destroy Judge Roy Moore, who I think most Christians support him in his stand for our Lord and his stand for the Ten Commandments. And William Pryor humiliated and destroyed Judge Roy Moore, and then he was rewarded by the current administration in Washington, D.C., by being given an interim appointment to the federal bench. So the Bush administration rewarded William Pryor, gave him an interim appointment. Now, of course, most Christians don't know that, and I think if they did, they might take an entirely different approach to the nomination of Judge Roberts.
Yeah, I agree with you, and they should, and as a matter of fact, it's interesting what that case had to do with. Of course, Chief Justice Roy Moore, as many people know, erected a monument to depicting the Ten Commandments and in the judicial building in Alabama. And the wonderful thing about this American hero, Roy Moore, and by the way, I had the privilege of being with him last week. It was wonderful to be in his company. It's a privilege and an honor to know the man. But he was attacked for doing one thing. What that case was all about was the acknowledgement of God. And even Chief Justice Moore has said, it's really not about me. It's not about the Ten Commandments, even. It's about, can the state acknowledge God? And that was the issue in that case. And the federal court said, no, the state cannot acknowledge God. And then William Pryor, as you correctly point out, prosecuted Roy Moore for what he called disobeying the order of the 11th Circuit Court. But it was an unlawful order. It was violative. Chief Justice Moore had the option of either listening to the 11th Circuit, which didn't have any authority or jurisdiction in the case, and or upholding his oath of office. And he chose, like an honorable man, like an American, to uphold his oath of office. So we're privileged to have a man like that. And he kept that issue so wonderfully clear and pristine. The issue was, can the state acknowledge God? And, of course, the Constitution of Alabama demands and calls for acknowledges God in its very first sentence. So Moore was in the absolute right here. Bush, instead of supporting Moore, had Pryor prosecuted him, and then was rewarded, as you say, with a seat on the federal bench. So this should tell you where men like Mr. Bush and others are on these issues, and he gets all this credit of being this wonderful Christian, and yet the fruit that we see is just the opposite.
Well, the great tragedy is that the American people are not getting the truth from the controlled media. I dare say that very few people in our audience have ever heard of Judge William Pryor, and if they do, they don't understand the significance of his being given an interim appointment to the federal bench. In other words, he couldn't get onto the federal bench. President Bush appointed him there, and this was a reward for destroying Judge Roy Moore.
Right.
If that actually occurred, why doesn't every American know about it? And the reason they don't know about it is because they're not supposed to know about it.
Right.
And such things are actually kept from the American people. And now, of course, we're rallying behind the latest nominee. And, of course, if you look at his background, it is very, very questionable.
Well, sure it is. And once again, it's what I'm calling the false fight. Two things happen. One thing is Americans are kept busy by the media worrying about whether Rafael Palmero took steroids and whether or not there's going to be a congressional hearing about that. And I don't find steroids in baseball players anywhere in Article 1, Section 8. I don't know anywhere where we have the authority, the Congress has the authority to tax to spend your money so that they can investigate baseball. I mean, it's just absurd. But it's kind of this circus. It's the bread and circuses that go on and the smoke and mirrors so that the real things that are happening in America, not the illusion, but the real things, we don't see and we don't know about. But so this Roberts nomination is just one example of this false fight. It's not really a fight. Roberts is pro abortion. He's not one bit pro life, but he's being pumped up. And it's interesting. We were talking in my office today. You know, NARAL attacks him, and all these Christian groups are jumping in to defend him. And yet NARAL wins either way. If they get him, they win. If they don't get him, they win. So it's a false fight. And Americans need to wake up and smell the coffee.
Hold that thought right there, Mac. I'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Michael Perutka. And, of course, the point that Michael is making is really such a valid one. What they try to do is get us fighting over nonsensical things. Today there is a fight about embryonic stem cells. Should we have the use of embryonic stem cells, or should we not have the use of embryonic stem cells? Well, stem cell research has done some of the most marvelous things. But they're adult stem cells. You don't need embryonic stem cells. In fact, they don't work. You inject them into the brain, and instead of curing the problem there, you end up with teeth and nails and hair and teratomas, and this has happened time and time again. Embryonic stem cells don't work, and every scientist knows that. Adult stem cells do work. They've actually cured, or at least gotten people who are quadriplegic up walking with AIDS. They have had dramatic improvement. But the issue is not embryonic stem cells or not, but it is adult stem cell research, which has a great promise to help people. But that's never brought out in our discussions. And as with so many things here, as Michael Perutka has said, we debate the wrong issues to keep idle minds busy so people cannot effectively see what's really going on and what the issues are. And I think your point is so well made, Michael.
Well, thank you. This nomination of Judge Roberts and embryonic stem cell research, they're just two examples of the drift away from the American view. I was mentioning earlier, there is an American view. You could say it in just three sentences. There is a God, our rights come from him, and the purpose of government is to protect those rights. That's what makes you an American. And Dr. Stan, just a couple of weeks ago, I had the privilege of making some remarks. It was actually at a cemetery in Washington, D.C. And after I made those remarks, a gentleman came up to me, and he said, Mr. Perutka, this gentleman was in his 60s, but he was just learning. He was just reading some books and reading some things, which was starting to open his eyes to this false fight and what's been going on in America and the myth that he had believed. And he said, I want to ask you a question. He said, nobody's been able to answer this, either Republicans or Democrats or anybody out here in the media. He said, why won't either Mr. Bush or his opponents, why won't anybody stop the immigration problem? Why won't anybody defend our borders? Why won't they take any action against illegal immigrants? Why won't either side do that? And I said, you know how we talked about what makes you an American, sir? What makes you an American is not geography, where you were born. What makes you an American is not your Social Security number, your driver's license.
Hold on, thought we're going to be back here in just a moment as we bring our other stations right on back forward with us. Right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Michael Perutka, who was the Constitution Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. And the reason you may not have heard of him is because of the degree of control that exists over the media, which is controlled by largely by five major corporations. Well, Michael was just saying that a man came up to him and said, you know, he didn't understand why neither the Republicans nor the Democrats would do anything about illegal immigration. In other words, other people are flooding into this country. Jay Leno had a joke the other night. He was commenting on the fact that, you know, they did a recent poll in Mexico, and 60% of the of the Mexicans said that they would like to come to America, and the other 40% are already here.
Already.
Right? But, you know, the thing is that they could close the border down anytime they wanted to. They do not want to. They put every possible barrier in the way of the Immigration and Naturalization Service enforcing the law, and the people who do try to stop the immigration are marginalized and demonized and sometimes even come under tremendous attack. By the administration, or either the state or the federal. And so the gentleman is asking Michael, I mean, why won't either political party try to secure our borders? And what did you tell him?
Well, thank you. I'm sorry to tell a story through the break like that. But what I had said in my remarks was, I was talking about the American view. And there is a God. Our rights come from him. The purpose of government is to protect those rights. And what makes you an American is not your Social Security number or your driver's license or your or a passport or where you were born. What makes you an American is your adherence to that belief. In other words, if you believe that there's a God, our rights come from him, and the purpose of government is to protect those rights, God-given rights, that's quintessentially what makes you an American. And I said, now, why won't either of these parties, why won't either of these men, any of these people, close the border to protect America? Because they're not Americans. Because they're not Americans. In the way we're describing it, which I think is that, right, you know, Chesterton said America was the only country founded on a creed, a system of beliefs. And it starts with the acknowledgement of God and his creation of the universe. So what I think you have to look at, America, you have to say, these people who are leaders in America and who are pulling the strings now are not Americans. And I could see this man, his eyes started to get a little wide, and he went, oh, well, of course, well, sure. And then he said something that I really appreciated, Dr. Stan. He said, well, that explains a boatload of other things, too. And you know it does.
And I think that people have to understand is that there is another worldview. There are people who look at the world differently than most Americans and that most Christians do. And these are people who believe in globalism. They believe in establishing a one-world government under a ruling elite, and they believe in establishing a different world religion. And everything that they do is predicated on that supposition. In other words, today they're closing down our military bases. Why? Because we're not going to need a military force here in the United States. We're going to have our forces stationed all throughout the world. Our forces have been stationed in Germany for 60 years, since the Second World War. Our forces remain stationed in Japan for 60 years after the Second World War. Our forces remain stationed in Korea. 50 years after the Second World War. And we're going to keep our forces in the Middle East and everything you were told, you know, about, oh, we're going to bring our boys home. No, we intend to keep them there. We cannot let the American people know that our leaders are not dedicated to America as a sovereign nation. They're dedicated to opening our borders, to destroying our culture, to bankrupting our country, to sending our jobs and sending our factories and sending our wealth to other countries and lowering the living standards of the American people. But they can't come out and say that, because if they did, why, the American people might actually become aware of what's going on and vote them out of office, or at least try to. Or they might become disturbed and realize, of course, we have people in Washington, D.C., who worship a different God. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it, Michael?
Well, it is. It has to do with who's in charge and who's the boss. And we live in a country that was founded on the idea that Christ is Lord, that our human laws that we utilize here in our country have to be consistent with his higher moral law, or they're not law at all. So, as you correctly point out, Dr. Stan, I'm talking about the American view, but that's not the only view. There are other views, and there are men out there in positions of authority in America who do not subscribe to the American view, and that's why I'm saying they're not Americans. And when I told this man that the President of the United States was not an American, well, that's a big thought. But it's absolutely true, and Americans need to recognize it. And these are the kind of things that we talk about and point out and put the evidence out to the American people in the AmericanView.com and the American View radio program. And I urge people to go there and also to make themselves knowledgeable about the foundational principles of America, and to know what America was founded on by studying using our materials in Institute on the Constitution. And there are other good materials out there as well, but this is available to you at iotconline.com. So I urge people to make that available to yourselves, so that you can take your place on the wall here and do your duty for God and country.
And I think that President Bush feels, I figure he is a figurehead for the power elite that really surrounds him. Now, I don't know how he feels about these issues, but I know that he really reads his scripts. He is told what to do. And time and time again, when he speaks without a prepared speech, he'll say some of the most ridiculous things. So they very seldom will allow him to speak independently. And any time he gives a press conference, it is all carefully scripted ahead of time. And I don't know if you've noticed this, Michael, but, you know, he knows which reporters to call on. If you notice, the reporter always has a scripted question that George Bush looks down at the podium, reads the scripted answer, and then goes on to the next reporter. But he doesn't look at the audience to find out who the next reporter is. He looks down at the script. And unfortunately, this is the situation we're faced with today. We would like to believe we had leaders who were honorable, who believed in doing what was best for our nation. But, of course, what we're doing, we have the largest spending program that we've ever had, not under the Democrats, but under the Republicans. We have the greatest of trade deficit we've ever had. And then, of course, this war over in Iraq is actually just soon going to basically bankrupt our society and destroy the value of our currency. We're closing down our military bases here. Nobody says why we're closing them down. Well, I will tell you, because the whole idea is to actually have our military in other countries so that they're not here defending America. Their purpose is not to defend America, but to dominate the world. When you understand that, everything makes sense. That's the reason we're not trying to defend our borders, because we're going to unite the Western Hemisphere, or at least the Northern Hemisphere, into one unit. Then that's what CAFTA is about. That's what NAFTA is about. But, Michael, the average individual doesn't understand these things, do they?
Well, no. And as I said earlier, this is not information that's going to come to you through ABC, NBC, Fox, or whatever. The talking heads that you normally see and hear are all of the real issues, the true issues, the real important things that are going on in America are off the table. They're not discussed there. It's all silliness. And you have, you know, Hannity yelling at Combs and Combs yelling at Hannity, and every so often Ann Coulter's in the middle, and you have this kind of this silly kind of yelling and screaming where nobody finishes a sentence, and nothing is really learned, nothing is explored, and the true issues aren't even discussed. You know, Dr. Stan, we live in a constitutional republic. Our Constitution is designed to limit the power of government. you know, Article 1, Section 8 lays forth the 18 things that the Congress has the authority to tax and spend money on, and we estimate now that almost 90%, perhaps, of all the spending that goes on out of Washington, D.C., is illegal. It's unlawful. There's no authority to do it. And it doesn't matter whether Mr. Bush or Mr. Kerry won. It doesn't matter whether the Democrats or Republicans are in power. They're really the same animal, the same beast, and neither of them are for smaller or more efficient government. Neither of them are for the sanctity of human life. Neither of them will stop the killing of babies. Neither of them will hold judges accountable. Neither of them will reform the tax system, seriously reform the tax system. They're both for federal in unconstitutional intrusion into education. None of them, as we say, will protect the borders. And as a matter of fact, this when you understand this globalism that you've explained and that we see, then you also understand why they need to take your arms away, that the right to bear arms is being undermined by both Democrats and Republicans. It won't be until our standard of living is reduced, and we don't have the right to the ability to defend ourselves, that we can be subsumed into this new world order. So they want the chaos to occur. The chaos is not an accident. It's not accidental. It's very purposeful. And both Democrats and Republicans are doing it. This is why I had the privilege to run for office on the Constitution Party ticket. We were pledged to end these abuses, to actually run the government in accordance with the Constitution, recognizing and based on the principles of America's founding. And I really believe that it's inevitable that people will and people are waking up to the reality that we don't really have an alternative between the Democrats and the Republicans, and what we really need is a second party, because they're just merged into one party that is dedicated not to the American view, but to the communist view or the socialist view and the internationalist view.
Or the fascist view, but it is all about total government. And you were commenting about education. You know, the Bush administration was able to get through Ted Kennedy's education bill. That was the No Child Left Behind bill. Ted Kennedy couldn't get that through. That's why the Bush administration put it through. Well, Ted Kennedy couldn't get through the Medicare drug bill. The Bush administration could do that. And what most people don't realize, and if anybody really wants to verify this, we'd be glad to send you the documentation, is that the Bush Family Foundation, with George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush, actually gave the reward in the year 2003 to the outstanding legislator in the United States. And who do you think that was?
I'm going to guess Ted Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy. No, seriously, I'm not joking at all. People think we have a two-party system. I mean, we see that George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton are traveling around the country together. They went to the Super Bowl together. In fact, at the last Super Bowl, I couldn't help but notice when everybody else was singing the Star Spangled Banner with their hand over their chest, neither one of them had their hand over their chest, and neither one of them was singing the Star Spangled Banner. So we, unfortunately, have
they're not Americans.
They have people who have a different worldview. And they're dedicated to this idea of a one-world government and a new world order. And when you understand that, everything going on in America makes sense today. Otherwise, most people would be as perplexed as that gentleman who came to you and said, why won't they try to close the border?
Why won't they do that? Well, Dr. Stan, when I saw him, when I saw his face, the light dawned, it was almost like my cousin has a phrase that once you turn the prism, you know, the white light hits the prism, and once you turn it, you see the light separate into all its colors, and you see what's really happening. You really never see white light again, do you? and that's what needs to happen to the American people. The prism is turning, and what we're trying to lay out these facts and circumstances and this truth for the American people, so that they can wrest control of the of America back from this these internationals, and we are way down the road, as you point out on your program, and as you well know, we are we're way down the road, and we need to wake up quick.
And no question, but you know, with what you're doing and what other people are doing, and using the last vehicle we really have of reaching people, and that is radio. And I will tell you, all across America, the internationalists are coming in and buying up radio stations and radio networks, and taking them off, either giving Christian programming or talk programs, things of that sort, and putting on music. Why? Well, not because they're going to make more money that way, because talk radio is very, very popular with the people. But they want, of course, silence the information. The last thing they want, as we move rapidly towards the implementation of this one world government and the coming economic chaos that will be used to transform America forever, the last thing they want is for the American people really to understand what's going on. And, of course, to oppose this move, this unconstitutional people who have sworn allegiance to our Constitution and yet won't even allow in courthouses the Declaration of Independence to be posted because it mentions God.
Well, of course, and that's what they need in order for their movement to ultimately totally succeed. They need to wipe out anybody's allegiance to anything else. So and they have to wipe out anybody's ability to resist. So or desire to resist. And the allegiance, the acknowledgement of God, is an allegiance that they must undermine in order to make that occur. That's why you see these attacks on the Ten Commandments and on the Pledge of Allegiance, for example, and I have other problems with the Pledge of Allegiance, but that's another program. But that's why you see these attacks on the acknowledgement of God, and that's why they attacked Roy Moore so viciously. And make no mistake, it's Republicans that have been in charge here for a while that are probably the worst enemy of freedom and liberty in America, because they fly the false flag. They give you the impression that they're conservative, they're for limited government, they're for fiscal responsibility, and they're for none of those things.
Well, there are some Republicans that I know that really are, you know, trying to do the right thing, but it's the leadership that will actually, you know, bring tremendous pressure to bear, so that people, you know, the congressmen, many of them will knuckle under. During the recent debate on CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Organization, the polls were 30 to 1 against that. 30 Americans opposed it, one American supported it. And yet, the administration spent $50 billion, that's B billion, in bribes to the congressmen to offer things for their districts, $50 billion to get that through. Didn't matter what the American people wanted. There is an agenda. And, of course, that is the destruction of America's national sovereignty, because that's what CAFTA was all about. That's what NAFTA is all about. That's what the World Trade Organization is all about. We're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, the hour just flies by having you here, Michael. Michael, let's get your website and your telephone number out one more time.
Well, thank you so much. I ask people if they'll go to theamericanview.com, and you got to put the V there. It's not just American View. Theamericanview.com, and that'll also get you to our Institute on the Constitution website. You can get there through that website. And we need to do two things, Dr. Stan. We need to understand our own history. And the principles upon which government upon which we're founded, we understand the American view, and then we have to apply it. So I urge people to get busy, study, know your history, know your Constitution, know your form of government, which John Roberts doesn't, and then get out there and apply it. And Dr. Stan, I am so grateful for the opportunity to be on your program and be with you and discuss these things, and I thank you for the important and wonderful work that you're doing to wake up America.
Well, I appreciate everything you do, Michael, and I hope that you won't be such a stranger. We can get you on again very, very soon, because I think your message is so important. You cannot preserve our freedom if you do not understand the foundation of that freedom, and that is the Constitution of the United States. It is not taught in schools, it is not discussed, intelligently by any of our leaders, and certainly the people in the Supreme Court, that opens every session when the crier comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court. And of course, yet that court has said, we cannot mention God in our classroom. We cannot have anything about God in the courthouse. What's wrong with this? Well, you have to understand there is a conspiracy against God. There are people in the Supreme Court who would destroy this country. The Congress opens with a prayer. The Senate opens with a prayer. Every one of our constitutions of the 50 states mentions God in it, and yet we can't teach that in our classroom. Why? Because they want to destroy the faith of a generation of our children, and when they've done that, they will have destroyed the nation. Michael, do you have one parting thought for our listeners?
Well, again, I want to say one more thing, Dr. Stan, and that's not only do we have to understand our form of government, understand the Constitution, get out there and apply it, we have to vote for people who we are confident do have that understanding. You please don't vote for the lesser of two evils. When you do that, what you get is more evil. You need to get out there and proactively look for a candidate who knows these, who understands these principles and is willing to apply them. And if there's not one there, maybe that candidate should be you.
A great thought. Well, thank you very much for being with us, Michael. It's always a pleasure, and we'll certainly look forward to having you with us again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Michael Perutka. I hope you enjoyed our time with him. We'll have him again soon. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly Michael Perutka has been a supporter of Radio Liberty, and we support his effort to educate the American people about the importance of our Constitution. The Constitution is the very essence of our freedom. The Constitution was established to fulfill the ideas laid out in the Declaration of Independence that said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to ensure these rights, governments are instituted among men. That's what it was all about. Why do we have a government? To ensure our God-given rights. And that's why the Supreme Court and so many of our leaders have done everything they could to destroy the religious foundation of this country. Up until, 50 years ago, everybody in the United States, everybody in the world knew America was a Christian nation. If you were to say that publicly today, you would be attacked by every means of communication, and that shows very clearly the bias of the people who control the mass media in the United States. We do hope that many of you out there listening to our program will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And certainly you can listen to our programs there on the Internet 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly, linking to the other networks that are there. And, of course, you won't get much accomplished, but you'll get that information and that education and understanding that is so necessary if America is to survive as a free nation. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can listen to our archive programs, and our programs are archived for about 6 weeks. You can look at the newsletters we have there, and please feel free to pull them down, to read them, to study them, to copy them, and then, of course, to distribute them if you'd like. You have our permission to copy anything we have produced. We want to get this information out. And then, of course, we certainly would be glad to send any of our listeners the information we have. Who really rules America? Is there really another force that most people are unaware of? Well, we have two newsletters, the May newsletter and the June newsletter. They're entitled The Occult Hierarchy, Part 1 and Part 2. And this is a spiritual organization. And there are people who, of course, go right along with this organization. Some of them are under the control of the organization. And, of course, the people within this organization come from another dimension. As incredible as it may seem, please get the newsletters. We'd be glad to send you either the May or the June newsletter free of charge if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then we suggest that you go up on the Internet, Google in the word occult hierarchy, and read down the page, and you'll see a number of references to organizations that admit they are part of the occult hierarchy. And they have a plan for the world and for your life. And the word plan, it has a capital P, which deifies it, because, you see, it comes from the rulers of the other dimension. There really is a spiritual battle, ladies and gentlemen. It's being fought out in our courts. It's being fought out in our schools. It's being fought out, yes, even in our churches today, because there are very, very real problems. We've seen them in the Catholic Church with, of course, so much of the corruption and the pedophilia and the changing of their doctrine. And we're seeing it at the Protestant Church today as we see the change in the music of our churches and the message of our churches and the basic thrust of Christianity, which one time was to convict us of being sinners who were saved by the grace of God. But we don't talk much about that anymore, because we certainly don't talk about hell or God of justice or God of punishment. God is love, but God, if God is simply love, then it is the ultimate triumph of evil, because there also must be justice in the world. So we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and for our protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927, our website, RadioLiberty.com. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Marty Schachter, and Marty helps keep Radio Liberty coming to you on these stations. And Marty is with the Calben Soap Company, and he has some fascinating things to tell us that I wasn't aware of before. Marty, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, for inviting me on your broadcast again. I appreciate that very much.
All right, fine. Well, you were just telling me a day or so ago that there had been a number of books written that actually talked about your soap company that's been in the family for at least a generation or more.
Well, this is what's so curious, because we consider ourselves the world's best-kept secret. We're a very small company. We're family-owned and family-operated, sort of like a family partnership, And basically, for the last 50 years or more, we've only sold our Pure Soap products to institutions, hospitals, school departments, government offices, never to the general public or to the consumer, which was, we've discovered, a very big mistake, because we have products that are virtually twice as good as what's available in the marketplace. All the products are triple concentrated. They're all pure soap, not detergents, but soap, and earth-friendly. They're pollution-free. And to discover, apparently, some of the authors and people in the book-selling industry have discovered this. I'll give you an idea of what books there are. There's a book called Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About by Kevin Trudeau. Now, last week, it was number 2 on the New York Times best-selling list. The week before, it was number 1 on the New York Times best-selling list. And apparently, this author has gotten our products, has tried it, and he's mentioning it very in detail in his book on natural products. Another book we just discovered is a book called Baby Bargains by Denise and Alan Fields. Now, they've purchased our products, and they've given us 2 pages in their Baby Bargains book detailing and extolling our Pure Soap products, and it's been advertised on the Oprah show, the book that is. So Oprah is actually promoting this Baby Bargains book, and in turn, there isn't a day that doesn't go by. We don't get a call from a consumer, and we, of course, ask them very in detail, how did you hear about us? And they say, Baby Bargains. And I say, wow, that's wonderful. Another book that's been out about 10 years is called Wholesale by Mail or Online Catalog. Every year they come up with a new edition. It's owned by the Reader's Digest Company. And we have 2 pages in that book, again, describing our products and advertising, in a sense, telling the people that these are products you can't buy in a store. Another book that's been with us for a long time is called Non-Toxic, Natural, and Earthwise. This is by Deborah Lynn Dadd. She's the queen of green. And she called me about a decade ago and said, Marty, I'm writing a book, and I need your permission to put information about your company in my book. I said, that's wonderful. How did you hear about it?
Hold that thought, right? Just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Marty Sector. And Marty, you were just saying that the Queen of Green had contacted you and would want to put some information in books she was writing about your products. And how did she find out about you?
Well, apparently, and when I asked her how did she find out about us, she said, unbeknownst to you, I've been ordering your products by mail order, your bath soap and hair soap and dish soap and laundry soap. I love them. I want to put it in my book. And the book became a bestseller on the New York Times list. Now, we keep that book in stock. We sell it at below cost because we feel we want to get the book out to the consumer. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book, and she's a very beautiful person. Another thing we just found out, there's another book called Life Force. This is by Dr. Jeff McCombs. He's been just telling all of his patients about our Pure Soap products, and he's also on the web called lifeforce.com, and we appreciate that very much. Again, we don't advertise in these books. They found us, they're mentioning us, and it's been great. Another new book we discovered in the last week that came out, it's a pocket book, and it's called Betty's Book of Laundry Secrets. And again, people are calling us. We ask them, how did they hear about us? They say, well, I just bought this book, Betty's Book of Laundry Secrets, and you're mentioned in there as having some fine laundry products. Another person that called, and we've been talking to people, it's on the web, it's called solveeczema.com. She's got about 30 pages on the web And of course, two of our pages are describing not only our products, but she says we've saved her son's life because the kid was breaking out from all the chemicals and solvents and pastes and liquids and products that were purchased in the marketplace. She had nowhere to turn. Somehow she heard about us, bought our products, and her child completely changed in his lifespan. He just feels better and looks better, and she's extolling it and telling everybody about it, not only on the web, but personally.
So well, Gerson,
some of the things that we really appreciate, we found out that people want something better, that they want freedom of choice. They're not getting this freedom of choice in a supermarket or drugstore or discount house. They're all promoting detergents. And I sort of want to cover the difference between soap and detergents.
All right, fine. Well, we'll do that in just a moment after we bring our other stations right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Marty Sachter of Calben Soap Company. So you go ahead, and you were going to talk about the difference between soap and detergents, and I think that that's really very interesting. You know, when we first talked, you mentioned that initially your product was primarily marketed to hospitals and to other institutions, you know, where they did a great deal of laundry, and they preferred using soap rather than detergents. Why was that? Why is soap better than detergents? And why were these large institutions that were so dependent upon, you know, the ability to run their own laundry, want to get something that certainly, you know, is rather old-fashioned compared with the modern-day detergent?
Well, let's go back to the 30s and 40s and early 50s. Let's go back to the electric or gas dryers in those days, especially in the 40s and part of the 30s. In the dryer itself, there usually was a small tube, about the size of a banana. It was a screen that fitted into the machine, and the screen was there and designed to catch broken buttons, pins, various little things, maybe a broken zipper or fastener, and it's designed to catch that so it doesn't rattle around in the dryer drum. Now, there was no such thing as lint in those days. See, lint is broken clothing. If the cloth breaks down considerably after years of use, it starts shredding and you have particles of lint. Now, in those days, the only cleaner that was available in the marketplace was a laundry soap, like Rinso, Fels Naphtha, White King, Ivory, Dove. All these were actual soap products. Detergents came on the market in the late 40s and again expanded into the 50s until they eliminated all basic soap cleaning products in the marketplace and converted over to detergents. If it takes a dollar to make a pound of soap, it only takes 10 cents to make a pound of detergents. So you can see where the chemical companies went to. Unfortunately, the detergents stripped the cloth of soil. Now, soap dissolves the soil in cloth. Dissolves it, rinses it away, doesn't hurt the fibers or the fabric. Detergents clean too good, in a sense, when they strip the cloth of grease and soil and diapers and food, they microscopically break down the fibers of the cloth as they're cleaning it. This ends up in the dryer, and of course the dryer manufacturers discovered we've got to put a lint trap in there to catch all this stuff, because if we don't do that, it sort of hangs on the cloth, on the shirts, on the towels, and you have to shake it to get all this lint off. Let's discover and invent and create and machine a lint trap. Well, it was small in those days. Now, it's like a drawer in the bottom of the dryer. You pull out the drawer, and you collect all the broken clothing from the detergent washing. Now, I'm not saying the detergent didn't clean good. It cleans good, but it cleans too good. And that's why there's no hand-me-downs anymore. There's shirts that would last 5 years, a man's white dress shirt, it now lasts maybe 90 days. A towel that would last, oh gosh, for years, a bath towel or a face towel, you've got that towel turning into cheesecloth in 60 days. The lint is just falling off the towel, going into that lint trap. You open up the lint trap and you accumulate all this lint. Of course, if you're making the pillows and mattresses and so forth, I can see the use for it. But the question is, which is more economical? Detergents clean good. They're very highly advertised. They clean too good. They make lint. Soap, which has disappeared from the marketplace, and that's why I'm here, to put it back into the marketplace, cleans the cloth by dissolving the soil, doesn't hurt the fabric, just cleans it, and it comes out fresh and clean, where you can have diapers and baby clothes as hand-me-downs. It don't exist anymore. But the battle is that the major detergent companies, manufacturers, spent billions of dollars advertising their product. I'll give you an example. Procter & Gamble, the largest detergent manufacturer in the world, spends in excess of $50 billion a year. Now, they gross that. That's what they gross. They gross $50 billion a year in their business. They spend 10% of that, or $5 billion, on TV advertising. They sort of brainwash and hypnotize the consumer like you wouldn't believe. And a woman goes to the shopping, gets a shopping cart, and goes to the supermarket, and you know she's going to pull off Tide, or All, or Dash, or Cheer, or White, all these products, because they all smell differently, they all advertise differently, and we feel clean shouldn't smell. We don't use perfumes. Perfumes are toxic. Perfumes burn. Perfumes cause rashes. Perfumes cause nose irritation, eyes irritation, skin irritation. But it smells pretty. Oh my gosh, it smells like flowers down the laundry aisle in a supermarket. Wow! This is what we feel is not right, because the perfumes do more harm than good. So there we are, basic. What's the difference in these soaps and detergents? Detergents are safer, detergents are earth-friendly, and I want to get into that earth-friendly factor, because 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure many of you people would remember that, or maybe even you, Dr. Stan, we're talking about Senator Gaylord Nelson. 2 weeks ago, approximately, he passed away. He's known as the man that started Earth Day as a holiday to celebrate Earth and fight pollution. And I read his obituary in the New York Times. It was a big obituary because people really liked him and known him. He's quite a man, quite an earth-friendly individual in the Senate for many, many, many years. He did something that no one, and even the obituary didn't even mention it, but I knew it because I was there. He proclaimed and wrote a law to Congress, to the Senate, to the President, to outlaw detergents, to ban it from the United States completely in manufacturing and distributing or selling. Detergents are doing harm. Detergents are creating foam in our reservoirs, in our lakes, in our oceans. They're killing the fish. They're just doing harm. Detergents are setting up all over. And he says they should ban it. And he tried to get that legislation in law, but Procter, Lever, and Colgate, they knew that they would be out of business if they didn't do something about it. So they approached the senator and his associates and said, look, let us in the industry solve this problem. We know there's a lot of pollution. We're going to solve this problem. From now on, we're going to create a biodegradable detergent. Now, biodegradable, that's a fancy word. It's a new word. What does that mean? It means the bugs will eat away the foam, and there'll be no more foam. But the truth of the matter is they added alcohol to the detergent. They sprayed alcohol right into the detergent base. Alcohol kills foam. You could take some rubbing alcohol or isopropyl alcohol or maybe even a little vodka, put it into a spray bottle, and you can suds up the sink by agitating it with a high head of foam from your laundry detergent or your dish detergent or hair detergent, spray the alcohol on it, and boom, you've killed the foam. It turns into zero. So they approached the chemical industry and said, look what we've got. We've got a biodegradable, and we'll prove it to you. And they would create a 10-inch foam factor in the laboratory, measuring it out as 10. They'd spray the alcohol on it, and 70% of the foam would disappear. You still have 30% left. There was still a small amount of foam on the bottom, but, you know, that's a small amount. That's just like saying, I'm a little bit pregnant. It's just small. It's nothing. Well, they convinced Congress and the Senate, and they sort of overwhelmed Senator Gaylord Nelson that they would take care of that. There would be no more fish dying, no more pollution. Our reservoirs would be clean. Well, that was all BS.
All right, now well, let's go ahead and get your telephone number and your website, because in case people would like to get in touch with you, how can they contact you?
Well, I first of all, I have a free catalog I'm happy to send to anybody. They can call me toll-free, 1-800-340-7091. They can see everything on our website, which is calbenpuresoap.com. That's C-A-L-B-E-N, Pure Soap, one word, .com. Everything's on there. Everything I've talked about, our bath soap and hair soap and dish soap and laundry soap, all very, very economical, all triple concentrated, all unconditionally guaranteed, and all earth-friendly with the elimination completely, 100%, not 70%, but 100% completely earth-friendly for the consumer.
All right, fine. That telephone number again, one time.
800-340-7091. I'm there every day, Monday to Friday. My name is Marty. I'm the owner and founder of the company. My father and I started it in 1947. We're happy to talk to you. If you've got any cleaning problems, please let me know. I'll try to solve them for you. If you want to know anything about any product on the supermarket shelf, anything, tell me what it is, and I'll tell you what it is. And this is what I want to do, is to service you, not sell, but educate you to a better life, to take you out of coach and put you into first class as far as cleaning the situation.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Marty Schachter, and we're talking about Calben soap and really the difference between soaps and detergents. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Marty, who will be with us a few minutes more, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, we'd love to, I'm sure he'd be glad to talk to you. And, of course, what happened was the major laundries, the hospitals and the hotels and people who had their own laundries services realized that they'd be far better off using natural soap rather than using detergent. So that was really your major source of production was for the large laundries, wasn't it, Marty, for many years?
You see, most of the hotels and motels, they have what they call an exchange linen service. That is, the company comes in, brings new sheets, new towels, new pillowcases, take out the old, and wash them. Now, if they had to wash them with detergents, there would be no longevity of the fabrics. They'd have to exchange it every 60, 90, 120 days. They want the fabrics, the institution fabrics, to last a couple of years or more, because then it's economical. They still use soap. We still have commercial laundries in the Caribbean, in Puerto Rico. We just, within the last year, are shipping to commercial laundries in Hong Kong, China. They don't have soap there. They have detergents, and the deterioration is driving them crazy. I solved their problem by shipping soap to them. We ship it all over the country. We're not limited. We're as far as any truck will go or United Parcel. We have everything in small sizes, not in barrels. The commercial accounts will buy everything by drums and barrels. And we have it in small packages, and it was something that would be so enjoyable to send out and listen to the comments that we get back from the consumer. And all we get is love. Not like. They don't like our products. They use them. They like them. But they love them. This is what we radiate to everyone. True, concentrated, pure love for pure soap, because it works. It does the job. And it contradicts all the garbage they're getting in the supermarket, all the toxic chemicals. I mean, it don't take much to pick up, to read the wrappers of Dial and Dove and Zest, Irish Spring, Caress. It's got, in each wrapper, you try to decipher the dozens of chemical additives, including predominantly sodium chloride, which is table salt, in their products. I mean, would you wash your face, hands, body, baby with salt? This is what the marketplace has, and we contradict that with our pure soap, which means no chemical additives. And it lasts longer, it's safer, it's honest, it's very inexpensive, and we feel we got something, and that's why it's our pleasure to be on your show, Dr. Stan, and talk direct to the consumer and give them that wonderful American choice.
All right, fine. Well, if there's anybody out there in the listening audience who would like to talk to Marty, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we'll be back here in just a moment or two to wrap up this segment of the program. And we're going to have an open line to the last half and talk about what you out there in the audience would like to talk about. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Marty Sachter will be with us just a moment or two more as we wrap up this segment of the program. But Marty certainly has a fascinating story. These are things that most people don't think about, the difference between soap and detergents. And what's the difference between your bar soap and so many of the other soaps that are available in the store, the Dial, the Dove, the others?
Our bar is pure, triple milled, that is, it's concentrated, so it don't get soft and dissolved. It's got only two products in it. It's got coconut oil of the highest USP grade and vegetable oil. We also put a few drops of pure almond oil, which is the same oil that's in a candy bar, just to give it a little essence. It's wrapped in a beautiful sealed wrapper to keep it fresh. It'll outlast any bar in the marketplace 4-5 to 1. It'll outlast them because it doesn't get mushy, it doesn't dissolve quickly, it stays hard as a rock. But not only can you use it for bathing, for washing your hair, you can shave with the bar if you like a razor shaving. You can use it as an all-purpose cleaner by taking a wet washcloth, wiping it once or twice on the bar, and you can wipe down anything for fractions of a penny. You can also use it and replace toothpaste. Now, it doesn't take brains or be a rocket scientist to pick up a tube of Crest or any of the major toothpaste, and they all say on the box and on the tube, notice, if accidentally swallowed, call Poison Control Center immediately. What is this? You got to call 911? I mean, a little kid can't read the label, a little 4 or 5-year-old. He's brushing his teeth. They're making these toothpaste so sweet, like candy, like ice cream. The kid might want to swallow it, and you'll have a sick kid there. We eliminate that. You can take a wet toothbrush, wipe it once or twice on the bar, and brush your teeth. And just the way it cleans your face and your body, it cleans your mouth. And you can't break down the cost of what it takes to brush your teeth by pure soap, because it's fractions of a penny. So these are multiple uses for a pure bar soap, and none of the bars in the marketplace can claim that. Oh. We do.
All right, fine. Well, let's get that telephone number out and that website out one more time so people know how to get in touch with you.
Please call me, 1-800-340-7000. 800-340-7091. That's 800-340-7091. Or you can look us up immediately on the web. We've got a beautiful, beautiful website. It's calbenpuresoap.com. That's C-A-L-B-E-N, Pure Soap. Ben is my father, and I honor my father by keeping his name in the business.
I always wondered what the Ben was in there for.
Well, we didn't want to say Benjamin. It was too long, so shortened it to Ben. And Cal, of course, is California. Ben is my father, and Pure Soap is what we make.
And you make it right here in California?
Right in Oakland, California.
Oh, well, I was born and raised in Oakland. It's certainly changed a lot from where it was when I was there, but it's still a beautiful, beautiful city. All right, well, Marty, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Stan.
Good night. God bless.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Marty Schachter. And, of course, the rest of this hour, we're going to have open lines. We're going to talk really about what you would like to talk about. And perhaps we can continue on with this idea as we see the things that are unfolding today. Nothing really appears to make sense. Why won't they close our borders? Well, it's really very simple. They don't want to close the borders because the agenda is to open our borders, to allow immigration, to have a multicultural society, a multilingual society, a society that, you know, which is certainly unites all men of all races together as we move towards the one world government and the new world order. Why are we closing our military bases? Very, very simple. They're closing the military bases because a military is not to guard the United States. It's to be stationed all throughout the world. And as we pointed out in the past, according to Congressman Ron Paul, why the United States has troops stationed in 130 nations throughout the world. The whole idea is that America is to dominate the world and force all nations into a one-world government. In the name of imposing democracy on countries that don't want democracy, they're going to create terrible, terrible problems that are creating in the Middle East. And my fear is, of course, as we continue working in Iraq, we're going to end up replacing a secular dictatorship with a theistic dictatorship. In other words, with theocracy, a Shia Muslim theocracy, and will unite both Iran and the southern part of Iraq, and create even more problems and suffering for the people in those tragic countries. But everybody's forgotten how the radical Muslims took hold of Iran in 1979, why your CIA, your tax dollars at work, as the CIA toppled the Shah and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we're glad to open up our lines. We're going to have open lines. If you're out there listening across America, give us a call at 1-888-244-Liberty. That's 1-888-24-Liberty or 464-8295. And it's impossible to understand what is happening in America today if you don't understand the global or the globalist agenda. There is a plan. It is to unite the Northern Hemisphere and create initially an open trade zone and then a common currency, and then unite the countries and create a government that will govern the whole of the Northern Hemisphere, or perhaps the whole of the Western Hemisphere. It depends on how the coming situation plays out. But we've already seen the effort to unite Europe, and we've seen that the people of France and the people of, I believe it was of Holland, refused to ratify the European Commission, the Constitution. You see, that really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how the people feel, because they're going ahead and implementing the European Constitution, which the people have voted against in Europe and in Great Britain. We just had talked to people there yesterday, and Michael Shaw, who did the program on Wednesday, was talking to the people over in Great Britain. They're implementing the European Constitution, despite the fact it hasn't been ratified. But it really doesn't matter how the people feel. And as I said during the last hour, the response of the people who were polled before CAFTA was 30 to 1 against it. In other words, 30 people opposed it to everyone who supported it, and that was about the ratio you had of the letters that were being received by our congressmen. But it doesn't matter how the American people feel about the CAFTA agreement. The elite wanted CAFTA. Now, if it had anything to do with free trade, it wouldn't be 1,000 pages long. It has to do with doing away with sovereignty. And of course, included in that was the Codex Alimentarius, which will allow them to begin to control the way that we deal with vitamins and minerals and the amount of vitamins and minerals that can be in a capsule. And of course, once they can limit the amount we can put into a capsule, they can limit how it's sold and perhaps put it under a prescription. You're going to have to go to a doctor to get it. And they'll become prohibitively expensive, and the doctor's going to have to, by law, examine you every month or so before you can take your vitamin C. And nobody will be able to afford to go to the doctors or to get these things. And they want to regulate every aspect of our lives. The CAFTA agreement had nothing to do with free trade. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we're going to have open lines this last half hour. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I was simply discussing what's really going on today. Because you cannot understand why we have uncontrolled immigration unless you understand this is the policy of the globalists who control both of our political parties. They don't want to control or close our borders because they want unbridled immigration. They want a multicultural society. They want a multilingual society. They want to be able to pay one racial group against another. They want to bring in massive amounts of people and massive numbers of people who are not Christian and do not come from the heritage that founded this country. Now, you don't have to be a Christian to live in this country and to enjoy the privileges of living in this country and to certainly to be free. But, of course, if you destroy the Christian foundation of this country, you destroy the very nation. And these ideas that men can live free with the power of government restricted. For as John Adams has said so well, our form of government was made for a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other. And that, of course, is why they do not want a moral religious people. They do not want our form of government to work because they want a return to feudalism. These people actually believe in a ruling elite. And I was reading today in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And, you know, sometimes it's great to reread what you've written. And there I quote from a man named Frederick Howe. And Frederick Howe lived during the first part of the last century. And he was very much a liberal. He really believed in this idea of a one-world government and that we really needed to solve the problems of the world by creating a world authority that would rule over everything. And he believed in all the socialist programs of that time. And, of course, he supported the First World War because he felt that the Germans had violated an agreement they had with Belgium that dated back to about 1870. And we couldn't have a world law. And we couldn't have a just world society if a country were able to violate a treaty. So he supported the First World War and the 21 million people who were destroyed there and the terrible carnage and suffering that came from the war. And he justified in his own mind because this was going to bring about a better government. And he was actually asked to accompany Colonel House as they traveled along with a group of about 60 intellectuals known as the Inquiry. That's the Inquiry, I-N-Q-U-I-R-Y. And they went to Paris in 1919 to write the peace treaty in the so-called PDF, the Treaty of Versailles. And Frederick Howe, was very, very close to this intellectual elite. And so he was asked to, prepare a paper on what was going to happen to the Holy Land, to the Near East. And so he was given access to all of the various treaties that had been signed in that area by the British and the French. And he found that the English had guaranteed the French that they were going to give them the Holy Land and that part of the country, that part of the Middle East. And then they made a treaty with the Arabs, and they promised them the same territory. And then they made a treaty with the Jews, and Lord Balfour promised the Jews the Palestine, and that was the Balfour Memorandum, or the Balfour Declaration. And here's old Frederick Howe, who believes that England was justified in going to war, because, the Germans had broken a treaty. And the English had made three treaties giving away the same property to three different groups. And he suddenly realized that the war had all been a sham, that he had supported a war that was fought for entirely different purposes, and he came to the conclusion that the war was really fought then for profit, and because it had to do with making money for the big munitions companies. And then he ran into a group of men. They were known as the Round Table. They were followers of Lord Milner. And, he had an opportunity to meet with several of the people here who were leaders of the group who surrounded the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Lloyd George. Lloyd George had come to power in 1916, and he was surrounded by a secretariat who were almost all members of this little secret society. Sort of like today, George Bush. George Bush is the president, but he's surrounded by members of the Project for the New American Century. There were only 25 of them initially, and yet his Secretary of Defense, his Vice President, the new ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, Skipper Liddy, Paul Wolfowitz, the new president of the World Bank, all of these people are among the 25 people who were in this little secret society that organized back in 1997 to take over control of our government. Well, it was exactly the same thing prior to the First World War. The group was known as the Round Table. And by 1916, Lloyd George had a secretariat that consisted of six people, and four of them came from the Round Table. And they prolonged that terrible war for two more bloody, unnecessary years, and millions and millions and millions of people died unnecessarily. So it was in the time after World War One when Frederick Howe is in Paris, and he runs into the members of the Round Table there, and he begins talking about how disillusioned he is by the war, and how it was. He suddenly realized that treaties mean nothing, that England didn't go to war, because of the treaties. They violated treaties far more than the Germans ever did. And it was all about making money. And he was told, no, you don't understand. This is a form of imperialism that is not imperialism. This is the white man's burden. The purpose of the First World War, according to the members of the Round Table, and they were the ones, of course, who prolonged the war, if we study this, we find that they created the First World War. The purpose of the First World War had to do with bringing all the nations of the world under the control of the Anglo-Saxon race. People of the lesser developed countries, these people of inferior cultures, they had to be brought under Anglo-Saxon control. And Anglo-Saxon control consisted of Great Britain and the United States of America. And these two nations then were to join together to create the one world government. And told him that England had lost so heavily during the First World War, and they'd lost the graduates of Eton and Harrow, of Oxford and Cambridge, a whole generation of them, and England was bankrupt. And so they were ready to pass the leadership of this movement to the United States. And it was at that point then that Frederick Howe made arrangements for Colonel House and the members of the inquiry to meet with the members of the Round Table. Now, if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll see the quotations, the information which I took from Frederick Howe's book, Confessions of a Reformer. And it's a page, you can just get a copy of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and look in the index for Frederick Howe, and you'll find the quotation I just told you. And this is really what it was all about. The First World War was not fought to make money. The First World War was fought to pursue this idea of a world government under a ruling elite. It was noblesse oblige. There had to be a ruling class to control all these poor people from the rest of the world, to bring them all under the control of the Anglo-Saxon race. That was the plan then, and that remains the plan today. Of course, the purpose of the First World War was to bring about the League of Nations, and when the United States refused to ratify the League of Nations, why, the Second World War became inevitable, and American and British corporations and bankers and elite began building up Adolf Hitler, the finest enemy that American and British money could buy. And then, of course, we had a Second World War, and that resulted in the United Nations, but the American people really weren't ready to give up their freedom yet. That's why we need a Third World War, and that's where we're headed. Now, you want to document much of what I've said. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will give you a good overview of that, and then we can introduce you to all sorts of other books that will lay the whole story out. The roundtable group at the meetings with Colonel House there in 1919 laid out a plan, and that was that they were going to establish organizations in both Great Britain and throughout the British Commonwealth and here in the United States to pursue the plan of the New World Order and the New World Religion. Now, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to chime in. If you have a question or comment, because I don't have anything really prepared, but I'm just sort of going over something I was reading today as I was preparing my newsletter. But basically, the organization that was established as a front group for the roundtable, which was the front for Cecil Rhodes Secret Society, and all of this is covered in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and in the writings of William Stead, who was a member of the original Secret Society, and in Stead's diary, and in the articles he wrote for Review of Reviews, and the book, The Last Will and Testament of Cecil John Rhodes. But the organization was created in Great Britain, and in Canada, and in Australia, and New Zealand, and South Africa, and Rhodesia, and all Commonwealth nations had a Royal Institute of International Affairs. And, of course, the headquarters is at Chatham House in Great Britain in St. James Wood, and I've been there. It's a house, I think, that many of the British prime ministers have actually lived in. Its house is probably, almost 200 years old today, at least 150 years old. And that is where the Royal Institute of International Affairs meets. In the United States in 1921, they formed a group known as the Council on Foreign Relations. And there, of course, their headquarters is at 5068 Street in New York City at the Harold Pratt House. Harold Pratt, what's Pratt have to do with? Well, there's a man, his name is George Pratt Schultz. Of course, he was the Secretary of State. He attends all of the Gorbachev State of the World Forums. In fact, he was on the board of directors of the State of the World Forum. He was one of the men who picked George Bush to become president, who put Arnold Schwarzenegger to become the governor of the state of California. And so it is that the Council on Foreign Relations was established in 1921 and placed its men into our State Department determining our foreign policy. Since, the Second World War, literally every Secretary of State has come from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations. I think the only, Cordell Hull, since Cordell Hull, every Secretary of State has come from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations, and of course, so does the Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and every Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and usually at least one of the two presidential candidates, and as we know that John Kerry was a member of the CFR, George Bush was not. He came from Skull and Bones, along with John Kerry, but the vice presidential candidate the Republicans ran was Dick Cheney, longtime member of the CFR. Well, let's go to Pico, who's calling from New York. Hi, Pico. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Dr. Stan. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. May you be blessed many times every day in your life for educating us to the extent that you do. I'd like to see if you could give a comment concerning Mr. Roberts' remark. That's Pat Roberts' remark when he mentioned what he said during the week against the Venezuelan president.
I think it was entirely inappropriate for him to say that. Certainly, there may be politicians back in Washington, D.C. are saying that, but I don't think a Christian leader should make that sort of remark. And I don't believe that a Christian leader should believe that we should go around killing people. I mean, a Christian leader, I think, should believe that, you know, God will intervene in the affairs of men, but we're not to resort to violence. I think it was a slip of the lip, and I think it was inappropriate.
Yes, Dr. Stan, I believe so, too. And, Dr. Stan, I was just listening as to what you were saying about the plan, Anglo-Saxon plan, and for the one world government. I took a trip about 4 or 5 years ago to a country. I'm not going to mention the country, but it was mentioned to me, and I was surprised. And now that you're mentioning the same thing, my question is, being that the case, Dr. Stan, and I know right now the United States has 107 different nationality that has a dual citizen in our country, and I was saying to myself that that was a perfect example for the one world government. Am I to conclude that, after all, the Bible mentions the one world government, that it would come out of our country, the Antichrist, for that matter?
Well, I don't know that the Antichrist is going to come out of our country, but I will tell you that I believe America is going to be terribly punished for what the good people of this country have allowed the wicked people to do, and the havoc that they've brought throughout the world.
Exactly. I believe that too, Dr. Stan. Unfortunately, and Dr. Stan, one thing that I also capture when you said that one of the gentlemen in the, from the plan mentioned that it was the white man's...
the white man's burden was the term.
Burden, yes. A lot of times, Dr. Stan, I've come to the conclusion, and I'm saying, my God, I remember former Secretary of State Colin Powell one time on TV mentioned about one of the founding fathers when he was dwelling on the issue of slavery in America that said, if God exists, we're in for a big one.
I think that's that says it all. Hey, exactly. Look, we're just about out of, I've got about three more calls.
Thank you, Dr. Scott.
God bless you. Thanks so
Thank
much,
you.
Pico.
Yes,
and
sir.
Let's go, of course, to Ed, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm enjoying your program here. Talking about the, you know, the what they saying the Anglo-Saxon to rule the world, it seems like Queen Victoria with her attitudes.
Well, of course, she was part and parcel of this whole thing. And of course, she was, I think she went out of office just about the beginning of the 1900s, but that's when Cecil Rhodes and his group were there. But if you want to check, you know, the reference I gave you by Frederick Howe, it's on page 113 of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want the pages out of Frederick Howe's book, I keep that close to me. It is so important people understand there really are people. I happen to be a white Anglo-Saxon, but
well,
you know, I think
yeah.
that every person is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. And
yeah,
I don't
well,
think we have the right to rule over other people.
No, my mother's mostly Mayflower English. But I noticed such as the how she even got American, she failed where her grandfather, you know, she succeeded where her grandfather failed in conquering the minds and hearts of the Americans.
Oh, you're talking about Queen Victoria.
Yeah.
But, of course, Queen Victoria was, you know, she was working very, very closely with this group headed by Lord Milner, and first by Cecil Rhodes, and then, of course, by Lord Milner. But the British monarchy, you know, through the years has been part of this whole occult hierarchy that rules the world.
Well, she got everybody to, she created the commercial mayhem around Christmas time, because before, up until about 1850, almost nobody had things like Christmas trees or holly, or plus she had this superiority thing. She even set them out now called William Weldon.
Hey, we're out of time, but thanks very much for calling in.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we've got time for one more call. We've got Paul calling from Ohio. Paul, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan, about your book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is it very similar to Letters on Freemasonry?
No, it's entirely different. It gives you the overview. It deals with Masonry, but not specifically. It deals with all of the secret societies, and there are a couple of others that I probably should have put in there, and if we ever redo the book or rewrite it, why, we'll include the OTO and of course, some of the other organizations that work within the shadows.
Well, I wanted to get the Letters on Freemasonry by Samuel Adams. or John Quincy Adams?
Yes, and I'm afraid we don't carry it, but I've heard about this.
It's expensive. It's $40.
And it may be John Quincy Adams, because he was very, very anti-Masonic.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan. I guess I'm going to get the Brotherhood of Darkness book.
Well, if I could just suggest, I think that if you're going to get one book, it'll give you a good background. It'll give you reference to a lot of other books. It will begin to put things into clear perspective, and then hopefully that you can help us begin to educate other people as we try to get people to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And unless you understand that there is a plan, and that plan is to destroy America, when you understand that everything begins to make sense.
I'm trying to spread the word as best I can, Dr. Stan.
Well, all you can do is keep telling people that if they don't want to listen, that's their problem. Don't get frustrated. But remember, this is not our battle. This is the Lord's battle. And as long as we're on his side and doing, you know, what he would have us do, that's all we can be called to do. Don't get discouraged. Just persevere.
At what time I'm afraid, I will trust in the Lord. Thank you for being there, Dr. Stan. Thank you, sir.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's good to know we have people out there listening in Pennsylvania and Ohio and back in the state of New York. And the audience is growing. We can tell from the response we're getting. And we certainly appreciate those of you out there who are helping us and helping get the word out. And our purpose here is to just simply talk to give you the source material, and you know, we try to have documentation on everything we say or tell you where you can get the documentation, and then encourage you to get the facts, and of course to go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down those newsletters. And the material in them is accurate. We had one, you know, I can think of one date we had here in our last newsletter, and we haven't made a mistake like that for several years, and we'll correct that in the next newsletter. But the rest of the material is entirely valid, and if we do make a mistake, we'll be the first one to come out and say, hey, let's correct this for future generations, because we expect these newsletters to be here long after I'm gone. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're really dependent on those of you who listen to our program to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day by radio and by shortwave and by Internet and 4 hours a day on shortwave, 5 hours a day on satellite. But we are reaching more and more people. We've taken on some exciting new projects, but also a little frightening. And we're going to be on 16 or 17 17 stations at 8 o'clock every morning starting the 5th of next month. That's going to be in the Middle West. So if you live there, you can certainly go to our website and see where those stations are. If you need additional information, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. It'll be 1 hour drive time in the morning, 8 to 9, and we're just hoping an awful lot of people will begin to hear the truth that they've never heard before. But it's a big undertaking, and if you're in a position to help us, why, we'd certainly appreciate your prayer for consideration of that. And then we're hoping to actually begin to syndicate our programs, and that is going to be certainly a project, but we're going to be getting going up on a KU satellite. And, of course, if you know people who can't get our program, why, they can, any place in the country, you can pull it down with a inexpensive KU satellite, and we'll be telling you more about that later on. But all of these are efforts to increase our outreach in the time that God has given us, to get people to understand what's really going on, to get them to understand that the media is controlled, that they have to be able to think differently than other people, that most people are going to think the same way because we are being constantly manipulated by everything. The Internet's a wonderful source of information, but there are a lot of disinformation experts who are well paid to confuse you and to post messages up there. You have to begin to learn who you can trust and who you can't trust as four sources of information, and we'll always try to steer you in the right direction. We're not always right, but at least we got a pretty good track record through the years, and fortunately we have some very smart friends, and we get together and talk from time to time, and then try to see things clearly as to what's happening. And I can tell you that America is facing some terrible, terrible problems, They're trying to focus our attention on the danger of avian flu. Why? 58 people have died over a period of almost 3 years, from 2003 to 2005. Why would they focus our attention on it? To scare us to death? Or are they planning that there will be a major epidemic? How could they say that they know there's going to be an epidemic unless they know there's going to be an epidemic? As Steve Quayle has pointed out so well in his treatises, and you may want to pull it down, over 80 microbiologists have died, a very strange and many of them violent deaths here within the last few years. Who would be killing off microbiologists in America? Why would they do something like that? Would anybody be cruel and crass and indifferent enough to create a major world pandemic that could kill millions of people? Well, I believe there are. And if you haven't read our Sustainable Development Syllabus, which contains the writings of Barbara Mark Shepherd, if you'd like those, we'll be glad to send those to you free of charge. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. As for the writings of Barbara Mark Shepherd, one of the wealthiest women in America, her book of co-creation, it was later on republished, and they took out some of the more violent and unbelievable things. It was republished as The Revelation, the book of co-creation, financed by the Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment to the Humanities. Lawrence, why would Lawrence Rockefeller's endowment fund something that talked about, well, killing a quarter of the world's population, that one quarter that wouldn't evolve to a higher level? If you'd like to see the pages from her book, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you can help us, we'd love to hear from you. And then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. And remember our number, 1-800-544-8927.